Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hey, welcome to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you, folks. Thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry with 23 years of experience in the real estate business. Joe is also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for providing our bumper music, and I am delighted to welcome to the program this morning Jeffrey Weiss and Mark Jacobs. Jeffrey is probably no stranger to folks who tune into this program. Jeffrey's a college prof, poli-sci at the Des Moines Area Community College. Mark Jacob, he was the Metro editor for the Chicago Tribune, also with the news editor, I believe, at the Chicago Sun-Times. And served, a bunch of years as a veteran journalist in the shoes on the ground reporting style. And he's the author of several books. Mark, do I have all that right?
Yeah, pretty close.
Okay,
I also write the Stop the Presses newsletter, which people can get.
Right, which is where we learned about your work. Thank you for that. So we got several things we want to cover today. We want to talk about Stephen Miller in the next segment. We want to talk about how we fix America's mainstream media mess. And later in the program, we always do a farm and food segment. Kathy Burns will join us for our monthly garden Q&A. But let's kick it off with a big aspect of reporting these days, the war in Iran. And we are actually taping this program a day before when Trump announced that he would be blowing up the bridges and who knows what else, and raining holy hell on Iran, bombing them back to the Stone Age. And so we don't know how that, I don't know how that turns out. This program will probably air on some of the community-owned stations that run it after that happens. So we hope we're not too out of date. We hope nothing terrible happens. We are wondering how the mainstream media will report it, and again, how they've been reporting it to date. Mark, you've been writing about this.
One of the big problems is that there aren't a lot of media, you know, in the war zone. And, unlike, with the Iraq war, there aren't embedded reporters, and there's just not a lot of access. Unfortunately, people are having to find out information when the government's not giving it to them. So it's going to be a real challenge. It has been so far to find out what's going on. That's, you remember the Iranian girls' school bombing,
terrible.
How Trump lied about that, and finally it was pretty much proven up that the U.S. did it.
So why is it that there are no media embedded in Iran during this war, as there have been in the past?
Because the Trump people don't want them in there. It's a real contrast to the Iraq war with George W. Bush. Kind of selling the war for a matter of months. They really went through. They got a congressional vote. They did all this stuff to sell the war. Trump, on the other hand, has simply said, I feel like doing it, so I'm going to do it. Not asking anyone's permission, and not really trying to persuade the American people that it's a good idea.
So not even explaining
part of that,
why.
Part of that is not letting reporters kind of embed with the troops.
And does that apply to international media?
Yes. They can try to get, close to the war zone if they want, but they don't have the protection of the U.S. Military. They're not taking them under their wing like they did in the Iraq war.
Yeah. Well, that sure makes it hard to get to the truth, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does, but people, have a lot of ingenious ways to do it. Satellite pictures, things like that. I mean, the journalists can be pretty ingenious about that. Although some of the U.S. government just in this last couple of days has asked some of the satellite people to shut it off so that other people can't look at, damage assessments and stuff like that.
Mark, I wanted to ask you about thus far what you've seen in the reporting. Who's doing it right? Who's doing it wrong? Or, I mean, it's just a broad question to you, but maybe sort of general impressions about the reporting thus far, whether it's legacy media or I know Courier and some outlets that you're affiliated with.
I feel like, I have been for the last decade criticizing news coverage of Trump because I think that it's generally normalized him or just has not taken the hard view it should be taking over somebody who lies so much. And he does, he just lies all the time. But in this war, I think the coverage has been really quite good, quite aggressive. Been asking the right questions about why are we here, what are we doing, what do we hope to accomplish? As and that bombing of the girls' school that I mentioned, I mean that was finding out the truth, even though the government didn't want the truth found out. And that was that was a lot of good media. The NPR was good, New York Times was good. I mean, there's just a lot of outlets out there, both legacy outlets and independent reporters who are doing a pretty good job. And when the Trump people weren't selling the war to the American public, they sure weren't selling it to the news media either.
So, do you think the media have been, the legacy media in particular, have been kind of ticked off that they are being excluded from the usual embedment in, in a foreign engagement? And maybe they're for that reason digging in a little bit deeper in ways that they can and coming up with better stories. Am I just imagining more than is truthful there, or do you think that's part of it?
I don't really think that's it. I mean, the reality of the situation now is that so few legacy news outlets have the resources to do that anymore. I mean, funny thing, the sad and funny thing is that even if the government let them do it, a lot of them I don't think would have the money to do it. It costs a lot of money. When I was on the Chicago Tribune Nation World desk at the time of the Iraq War, and we had somebody in Baghdad, and we rented an armored car, and we had a security staff of several people in a house. It really cost us, about a quarter of $1 million per person to have somebody in Baghdad during the Iraq War. So it just costs too much money now to where I just don't think that you'd have a whole lot of people participating in an embedding situation, even if it was available, because the news media, legacy and otherwise, is in much worse financial shape than it used to be.
Is there foreign media, Mark? I mean, let's say Al Jazeera English. I mean, are there places that maybe listeners of this show or people who read Stop the Presses, could go to that maybe have a little more access to the war zone, so to speak, whether the war zone is Gaza or southern Lebanon or Iran or Cuba, for that matter.
Yeah, there are a lot of different fronts in this war or in the various wars. I mean, Al Jazeera is good, and I bet that they'd be, I don't look at them too much sometimes, but they seem to be pretty reliable about what's happening in southern Lebanon. The thing in southern Lebanon is that it's kind of a sideshow in this country, but I mean, it's a tremendous kind of human tragedy there. It's like about 1 million people have been routed out of their homes for by this Israeli incursion. So it's terrible. It's terrible for human beings, for citizens, for civilians. But Al Jazeera is good. The Guardian is excellent. It's one of the sad things that I've pointed out in as far as political coverage in this country is that the Guardian, which is based in the United Kingdom, is one of the most reliable news outlets covering American politics.
I
And
agree.
to
I
me,
agree with you 100%.
that and that's really that says a lot about and not good about American
right,
media.
Right, right. Yeah. And how is it? I mean, the Guardian seems to have the most precise coverage, the most extensive coverage. And also it's available. I mean, there are paywalls with the New York Times and WAPO and a bunch of other legacy media that, you know, if you don't pay, you can't read. But the Guardian relies on donations and other sources of income. And they seem to provide really good stuff at no cost to a broad audience. How do they get away with that where other news outlets have failed?
Well, it's a foundation. You know, they started out with some money, and I think people appreciate them. You know, I send them money. You don't have to, though, as you know, as long as you have, they have some sort of pitch. When you go to their website, they have a pitch that you have to, like, click to remove that to read a story. So if you find that annoying, then you can subscribe to them.
Go ahead.
No, I would just want to say that they have a different setup than a place like the Washington Post. I mean, one of the big crises in American journalism is the idea that the very best reporting and the most talent is often behind paywalls. So, you know, they're writing to 1% of the American people. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not ideal that the American people often get second or third hand stuff or just get, you know, rumors on social media and don't have access to the highest quality reporting available. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are some exceptions to that. AP is available without paying for it. It's at apnews.com. I think it's .com. And, you know, so there are some others. But and then you have a situation with the Washington Post where it's owned by Jeff Bezos.
Right, yeah. That's a big part of the problem.
And he has many other really much more important businesses to him, you know, such as Amazon and Blue Origin. And so he's really, the problem with him is that he's been willing to make the Washington Post, at least on the opinion side, behave the way Trump wants it to in order for him kind of buying off Trump to leave his more financially important businesses alone. And this is an essential problem with corporate media ownership.
And we've seen so much of that. I mean, look at CBS. CBS is being called the new Fox News. They put Barry Weiss in charge, and with the Ellison family now owning more and more legacy media. Where does it end? I mean, is it possible that the New York Times at some point is going to be owned by some you know, billionaire with other interests?
Well, it's possible, but I mean, right now it's an independent company. They're also in the kind of good financial shape that a lot of other places are not. They're not a distressed property in any way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so they may survive, but many others will not. And this is something that one of the terms for this is called media capture. And this is what happened in Hungary under Viktor Orban, you know, when he was assembling power and becoming a strongman leader. Mm-hmm. Is that he got all his pals to buy up all the media. And therefore, the opposition politicians couldn't get on TV, et cetera, et cetera. It was a huge problem, and it's starting to happen here in this country, you know, with the Ellison family not only acquiring CBS, but also now has a stake in TikTok, and they're on track to own CNN if that deal goes through.
But hasn't this been going on for a while? I mean, I remember the day when the Des Moines Register, well, we had two newspapers in Des Moines, the Register and the Tribune, they merged. And then, of course, along comes Gannett, buys up the Register and a lot of other local papers. There is not a single person in Des Moines, who even the reporters who worked at the Register, who would not tell you that paper has declined precipitously over the years and to some extent due to Gannett's purchasing of it. So this problem has been going on for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been going on, I guess, since the introduction of the Internet. I mean, that's part of the deal. And the way that classified advertising, which used to be a, you know, real cash cow for local newspapers, just went away. So, yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean, here in Chicago, where I'm talking to you from, at the Chicago Tribune, in a 15-year period, they lost 85% of their staff.
Wow.
You know, so you're not going to be able to do the same kind of job.
right,
with that kind of thing happening. And so many local news outlets, newspapers, are owned by, you know, hedge funds these days.
Yeah. Who owns the Chicago Tribune?
And just to say, those hedge funds don't care about journalism. They care about making money short term.
And who owns the Chicago Tribune? I'm not even know.
Alden Global Capital. Mm-hmm. They're saying they own Denver Post, this and that. They're known as vulture capitalists because what they do is go into a place, a newspaper that's fairly distressed, and buy it up. They cut the staff dramatically. They jack up the subscription rates dramatically. And, you know, people who, it's their habit to buy a newspaper every day and read it. And so they're willing to pay the higher prices, or it's on their credit card so they don't even notice when the price goes up. But that way, Alden Global Capital makes a big score, makes a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. I don't think they care if they're around in 10 years. Right. I think they feel like they will make so much money before they go out of business that it'll be well worth their while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark, I was going to ask about, too, even sometimes when you go to news stories about our head of government, whether it's deep dives into the Epstein files and things like that, you know, you have some of that in, you know, New York or in Harper's Atlantic and things like that. But oftentimes I'm finding that foreign media seems to be doing a deeper dive into the upper echelons of our government and the things that are happening. I don't know if that's your experience as somebody who looks at media.
Well, I mean, I read The Guardian and I read The Independent, you know, and I mean, there's The Times of London, too. I don't read that much, but in The Daily Telegraph, there's fairly robust media in the UK, and it's always been, you know, it's always been well supported. I think that the real problem is not that the media is not available; it's just that you have to pay for it, and you know, that's just the way the business model has changed. It used to be that the advertising paid for it; that doesn't pay for it anymore. You have to, like, the reader revenue is the way it has to go now. You have to pay for your news. Which isn't bad. I mean, you know, you pay for your milk and you pay for your beer, but you, so paying for your news shouldn't be a problem, but it's just not the model that anyone's used to. Right. So very few people subscribe.
Mark, we got to run to a short break. Folks, Mark Jacobs with us along with Jeffrey Weiss. When we come back from a short break, we're going to talk about, maybe the architect behind a lot of the direction our government has taken, Stephen Miller. You wrote an interesting column about him recently, Mark. I want to discuss that and look at the issue more broadly. Again, this is Ed Fallon with the Fallon Forum. Back with you in just a minute.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. And thanks again to our sponsors and our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry. Catholic Peace Ministry promotes the peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrum Optometry. Dr. Joe Westrum and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry. All right, with me today again, Jeffrey Weiss, a poli-sci prof at Des Moines Area Community College. And also, Mark Jacob, a former Metro editor with the Chicago Tribune and also the news editor for the Chicago Sun-Times Sunday edition. Mark, Jeffrey, welcome back to the conversation. So one person that I don't think the legacy media is paying enough attention to is Stephen Miller, who is basically, I think you referred to him pretty accurately recently, Mark, at a calling me role, calling him the fevered brain that is pushing a Trump dictatorship. That's harsh. I don't find it inaccurate.
If it's accurate, I like it to be harsh. He has avoided becoming front and center to this whole, all this policy, especially the immigration policy, when he's the one who's really driving it. And that's a great advantage to him because he's really a very off-putting public figure. And so if he had to stand up there every day and, defend it, I think people would get sick of it. Instead, he's back at the White House, telling other people to do all these nefarious things. And he's anti-immigrant. I mean, it's not like he's anti-undocumented immigrant. He thinks that the country is not white enough. That's basically what he's saying. He does not want people coming in from, from other countries, unless they're he hates third world people from third world countries. And he has this, this view that they're, hurting America. When there's actually academic studies that show that immigrants actually contribute more in taxes than they take out in benefits. Yeah. It's not factual what he's doing. It's really just kind of a hate platform.
I think if you look at Stephen Miller closely, you'll see very clearly where this administration is heading. I mean, again, he's very comfortable with white South Africaners moving to the U.S., as is Trump. But there is this, I think it's fair to call him a Christian nationalist and a white supremacist.
And that he's not Christian, but he's a nationalist. Yeah, he's a white nationalist.
Okay. But does he consider himself a Christian nationalist, which I think is an oxymoron?
No, I think he's raised Jewish.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But clearly he's a nationalist. Clearly he's
a white nationalist.
He's into what you might call the great replacement theory. This idea that there's a nefarious plot by the Democrats to bring in people from overseas so that white people don't get control of their own country anymore. That kind of paranoid delusion that really is just kind of a mask for just basic racism.
Because dating back 500 years ago, this is always a white country, right?
Well, right. And the thing that gets me is, and I get that into this in my newsletter, is that, Stephen Miller's, his ancestors came over this country, from Belarus, with nothing, and they made good in this country. So now, here he is, generations later, deciding that that other people can't have the American dream.
Right.
It's just so hateful and so manipulative of people's, prejudices.
I'd say the same thing about Sean Hannity, Irish descent, an Irish American who is, he would not be allowed on any venue in Ireland. His rhetoric is so hateful and so contrary to any kind of open-minded perspective of the role of government in the world. And yet, it comes from a background. The Irish were the immigrants of 100 years ago that everyone despised. there were other groups as well, but it's amazing to me that people like Miller or Hannity can forget where they came from and become part of the problem.
Right, and most of us have a good experience with immigrants. Think about it. Great restaurants, great music. It just makes America more interesting, don't you think?
Who else
not a bad thing.
Who else would fix our roofs?
That's going to be a real issue.
I know.
One thing I was going to ask you too, Mark. Your newsletter, Stop the Presses. A lot of it has been the theme of the right-wing takeover and sort of the normalization of extreme right-wing ideology, which isn't conservative at all. And, I wonder what you think, Tucker Carlson and some of these people who have such a big platform, and they're also people who push white replacement theory. And so much of the extremism. I mean, you write about that. I mean, what is the advantage that the far right has in terms of the funding model that we have in the United States that the left doesn't have?
Well, I mean, more rich people want to stay rich. And so, I mean, more super rich want to stay super rich. So they like to, the Republican Party has really made a smart political effort to woo rich people, but with tax cuts. And so if you're going to save people millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, well, they're going to take maybe 1 million of that and they're going to give it back to the Republican Party or give it, you know, as seed money to people like Tucker Carlson. I mean, there is this real kind of perpetual motion machine going on where the super rich pay for the politicians, then the politicians pay the money back to the super rich. And it's your money, really. I mean, because as regular people, you're getting taxed more because the rich people are getting taxed less. I mean, it's not super complicated. But that's what's happening, and you get these really radical people, the Uline family, for example, and based in Illinois, and they are very active in Wisconsin, and they may be active in Iowa. I don't know, but I mean they fund a lot of stuff. They helped fund the rally before the January 6th attack on the Capitol. I mean they have their money in a lot of different places, and so these right-wing organizations, Moms for Liberty and stuff, they don't rise out of nowhere. And they're right. And to a large extent, a lot of these places are astroturfed. You know, it's not grassroots, it's astroturfed. They get a lot of money. There's a lot of money flying around in politics.
Explain that, Mark. Astroturfed versus grassroots.
Well, that's an expression for, like, you know, all right, so grassroots was when regular people just said, well, I can't take it anymore. We're going to fight against this. But when a right-wing foundation or a left-wing, I suppose, but any foundation or any political organization kind of sweeps in and recruits people in an area and gets them to be active in an issue, but kind of hides where they come from and pretends that it's grassroots people, there's a slang expression calling that astroturfing. I
hadn't heard that, but it makes sense. Yeah. So what could you say is the legacy media's shortcomings when it comes to exposing Stephen Miller?
Well, they don't write about him enough. They as being the, you know, real person behind it. New York Times had a good article about him just the other day and really said that since the shootings, the killings of people in Minneapolis, the, you know, Homeland Security had tried to take a lower profile, including Stephen Miller. You know, part of the reason that stuff happened in Minneapolis was Stephen Miller. I mean, he was really angry that they weren't deporting 3,000 people a day, which is he had just simply decided that's how many they were going to deport. I mean, people need to understand that this really important policy that is hurting people and causing deaths is not, I mean, Stephen Miller's the main driver of this. And the news media need to pick up on that. And frankly, you know, as I pointed out in my piece, the Democrats need to too. I mean, they'd be way better off making kind of Stephen Miller the kind of, you know, ugly poster child for this whole policy. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he's just a smarmy guy. He's just terrible. I mean, in the piece I mentioned that when he was in high school at Santa Monica High School in California, he's remembered for a speech in which he said, "Am I the only one who is sick and tired of being told to pick up my trash when we have plenty of janitors who are paid to do it for us?" I mean, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just the kind of guy who was just the biggest jerk in your high school. And, you know, always, you know, privileged and entitled and, you know, never believed in, you know, in hard work. He just believed in connections. I mean, it's just a bad guy.
One thing you were talking about, Mark, in terms of the political economy of the media. I mean, it seems that, I mean, if we have a system where big corporations send big checks to other big corporations, to attract people with purchasing power that the Democratic Party itself is at a big disadvantage? Because, I mean, democratic socialists don't exactly do well with FCC regulation, nor do they attract advertisers. You know, I don't know. I want to ask you, but a Bernie Sanders couldn't get a 2-hour, 3-hour talk show on national radio, not because he wouldn't get a lot of listeners, he would, but because who's going to advertise for somebody who says one of the biggest problems in the United States is the power of corporations, you know, brought to you by Disney. So, I mean, I don't know. I'll just throw that question out to you. It seems like, you know, that really there's just a huge advantage that you spoke of before, which is the ability to attract billionaires who are, you know, care more about money than they do about freedom or democracy.
Right. I mean, well, that's basically it. And you make a good point. It's that there is, you know, that rich people are people who decide who gets advertising dollars. And so that's where they go. It is a kind of a myth in this country that the reason there's so much right-wing radio and so little kind of liberal radio is that more people want to listen to right-wing radio. I mean, maybe more do, but not that many more. Right. The difference is a lot of these, you know, right-wingers, they're subsidized by extremely rich Republican right-wing people. I mean, the Rush Limbaugh in his early days got big tons of money from right-wing foundations. I mean, it wasn't a meritocracy, is what I'm saying. I mean, it wasn't one of those things where, well, the reason there's a lot of right-wing radio on in this country is because there's, you know, great demand for it, and it's more that, you know, extremely rich people gave money to, you know, to fund these things.
It sounds like Michael Moore didn't. I mean, his TV Nation was actually quite popular. And as a political dissident, I believe he sort of ended up being exiled to Europe in terms of getting funding for TV Nation, if I recall.
I want to talk more about radio in the next segment. Mm-hmm. A couple quick questions, Mark, before we got to run to a break. You wrote that Stephen Miller is the 21st century American version of a Nazi, which makes him one of the most dangerous people alive. That's pretty blunt.
Yeah.
Why do you feel that way?
Well, because he says stuff like that. I mean, you know, he says, you know, if you import the third world, you become the third world. In other words, number one, the whole concept of third world is, you know, I mean, it's like, in effect, you might as well say, you know, brown people or black people. This whole thing, you just look at what's happening in Minnesota. What is that? They have taken the Somali immigrants and they have turned them into a giant target.
Yeah.
And in which they're like, Trump's calling them garbage. I mean, that's a direct quote, garbage.
Yeah,
he's calling human beings.
Yeah.
Low IQ. You know, and this is a lot of the stuff people think comes from Miller, because, you know, that's just, he has this kind of race-based thing going.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, this is how every really scary, bad thing that dictators have done. This is how, Nazi Germany, but this is how Nazi Germany happened, is that you took an ethnic group and you decided to pretend that they were subhuman, and you got other people to hate them, and then you systematically took away their rights and persecuted them.
Yeah.
Well, this is what Trump and Miller are doing right now in Minnesota.
So
it's not a coincidence that these people are black that they're targeting.
Yeah, poisoning
Trump
the blood of
America. Always calls black people low IQ. Yeah. Always.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Mark. Trump is up there in years. His health appears to be very bad. You wonder how much longer he's going to last. But it seems to me the stage has been set for another person of his perspective, another authoritarian, to come in and fill the role. Steve Miller is comparatively young and right now seems to be the major architect behind the direction Trump is taking our country. If and when Trump moves on and yet another authoritarian takes his place, do you think Stephen Miller will still be instrumental in continuing to move that agenda forward?
I think he might. I mean, it depends. I mean, J.D. Vance, if J.D. Vance, like, takes over the movement, He might want Miller, because Miller will do all the horrible things that he wants him to do. I mean, the thing about it is, normal people don't behave this way. You know, they don't decide that a whole groups of people are bad and evil and garbage. They don't, you know, and so finding somebody who's as bad as Stephen Miller and as aggressive and energetic as Stephen Miller in pushing a kind of a race-based agenda, you know, you can't always find somebody who's that enthusiastic about being a horrible person. And Stephen Miller is.
That is a great quote, Mark. Finding somebody who's that enthusiastic about being a horrible person. It's a great quote, and it's also frightening. I think when it describes Stephen Miller, it's pretty accurate. Hey, I got to run to a short break. When we come back, we're going to have more conversation for you. How do we fix where we're at? And I want to follow up a little bit of our conversation about radio, too. A realm of the media I have a little more experience with than most. Again, this is Ed Fallon with you. Jeffrey Weiss in the studio with me. Mark Jacobs on the phone. We're back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, welcome back, folks, again, and Jeffrey Weiss with me in the studio. Jeffrey's a poli-sci prof at Des Moines Area Community College, and Mark Jacob with us on the phone, the former Metro editor of the Chicago Tribune, and also the news editor for the Chicago Sun-Times Sunday edition. Gentlemen, we've had quite a deep conversation here. I want to kind of airing our grievances about just how bad things are. I do want to get into what we can do to make it better. But I do want to first kind of lay out my understanding of, we talked a little bit about Rush Limbaugh in the last segment. Yeah, and again, I think Mark, you made a really, really good point. There were right-wing interests with money that were very willing to fund Limbaugh, and generally speaking, to fund radical right-wing radio. Right. When I first got started in radio, it was almost 17 years ago, and I was on a big station. I was on a station that covered about one-third of the Iowa counties. And I was not offered a position on that station as a paid employee. If I'd been a right-wing voice working for WHO or some other station, I would have been paid very nicely, in fact. But instead of being paid, I actually had to broker the time, so I had to pay $350 for a one-hour show four times a week, total for the year about $72,500 that I had to raise through advertising. And if I raised anything beyond that, then I got paid. And I did raise a bit beyond that, not a lot, but it seems like a huge mistake on the part of progressive causes not to want to support voices on the airwaves that you know, that tend to promote progressive values. And I mean, prior to Limbaugh, you know, talk radio was mostly voices on the left. Think Howard Stern. And think, I forget the guy's name, the guy in Colorado who was shot to death, in fact, by an angry listener who didn't like...
Alan Berg?
Yes, that's exactly right, yes. I mean, the voices on the radio prior to Limbaugh were progressive. Limbaugh was a minority when he got started. But you make a really good point. He got funded. along with that, you had the Fairness Doctrine being abolished under Ronald Reagan. And then Bill Clinton, who I will never understand why Bill Clinton thought it was a good idea to sign the Telecommunications Act in 1996, allowing big corporations to own multiple signals in any one market. And again, assuring that a handful of small and very right-wing companies could buy up all the big signals. And that's one reason my show is on about a dozen stations, but they're all smaller community-owned stations because the commercial stations won't have it because they're all owned by these big companies. Public radio is not interested, or as I call it, semi-public radio. So, I mean, that's kind of the lay of the land with radio. And I think it's underestimated by the left how really, really important radio has been to especially the working class, who are often busy with their hands or their feet, but they get their ears available and they can listen to stuff.
We're driving around.
Driving around. One
appointment to the next.
So there's my rant. Have at it.
Well, let me say something about that. It's yes, radio, but yes, a lot of things. I mean, yes to YouTube shows, yes to, you know, to Substack newsletters. What the CEO of Courier, which is the news outfit that I, you know, consult with and write for, they Tara McGowan, she makes a really good point that the Democratic Party has, like, every 4 years, they will spend 3 months just blanketing TV with all these advertisements, you know, and it's just, they will spend millions and millions on advertisements 3 months every 4 years or every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time, they're almost invisible.
Yep.
And the right wing has very smartly diversified, you know, very smartly been more active in radio, been more active on, you know, on newsletters and on YouTube, especially where you have a lot of, you know, podcasters, right-wing kind of lying propaganda podcasters. And the thing about that is that they reach people who are not inherently political, people
right.
who don't really care much about politics, but they vote anyway. So they can be influenced, but the left has done a really poor job for decades. The right wing has strategically outmaneuvered them,
and they continue to do a poor job. For the life of me, I cannot understand why when the Democratic Party controls Congress, why they don't push to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine, why they don't push to repeal elements of the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And why they don't try to find more opportunities to be, like you said, regularly and consistently getting their message across to the public, not once in a big push every 3 months before an election.
Right. Well, so can you explain to me why you think the Fairness Doctrine would be better?
Because it would require that if you're going to air certain certain content of a particular political perspective, you would be required to provide some time to a countervailing perspective.
Okay, but I mean, isn't that the issue that came up with Colbert and the Tallarico interview?
I'm not sure that's... you could argue that... Yeah, actually, you could argue that the late-night comics are pretty solidly left, but those media outlets that run them certainly have programming that offer a countervailing perspective.
So it wouldn't have to be on the same show. It
right.
could just be.
Right.
It's just like somewhere on that outlet.
Yeah.
And even
still, it used to be, I mean, when I was first doing interviews on WHO radio here in Des Moines, that's the megawatt, that's the megaphone that goes from one end of the state to the other. And, I would come on a very conservative talk show run by Jan Michelson, and we would disagree, but when he would have to be off the air for some reason, I think a half dozen times, I was the guest host. They would never, ever do that these days. I mean, they won't ever have any voice that's not very consistent and in lockstep with the Republican Party perspective on that station, period. So I think the fairness doctrine would be really helpful.
Wouldn't it be hard to, I mean, I'm just kind of playing a devil's advocate here. Wouldn't it be difficult to implement or to monitor or to, I mean, wouldn't it lead to 1,000 lawsuits?
I don't know. It worked before 1984.
Yeah.
Well, before Reagan.
We're in a different place now as far as both lawsuits, political lawsuits, aren't we?
Sadly, yes. But at least the lawyers, at least the lawyers are getting rich.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Trump's lawyers.
Yeah.
I don't think Stephen Colbert is probably left, by the way. He's probably a moderate center right, or, you know, if we're honest about it. But I'm just sort of pushing back on the labels. I mean, really, there isn't much of a left in the United States. I don't know where they're at. But I mean, a liberal like Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton is a solid conservative. I mean, it's in most of Europe, or even, you know, a Bernie Sanders is comfortable in the Financial Times, you know. So, you know, I'm just throwing that out there in terms of the terminology. But I still think, though, that we would need to give more weight to if somebody was on the left and their critique was really against big money, that their challenge would be how to reach the masses because of advertising. But I still take both of your argument real strong that that progressive people, or at least the Democratic Party, which is probably the last people to actually understand that their base is democratic socialist,
right.
you know, that they should do more, you know, if that makes sense.
Right.
But yeah, that they should definitely do more. And didn't you get taken off of that radio ad when it was bought by somebody?
Yeah, it was bought by Cumulus.
That was it, right?
Yeah, well, it was already owned by a big company,
okay.
But a smaller big company, and one that didn't mind some diversity. There were 24 hours of talk radio a day.
Yeah.
4 hours were more progressive. So there was some balance.
Yeah.
A guy named Bradshaw had a three-hour program where he would invite every radical right-wing listener to call in and beat him up, and he would just have his way with the arguments. But, you don't have that anymore.
No, and, that was a rarity.
Again, I don't understand the Democratic Party's lack of willingness to confront the issue.
Sure.
And, you know, regarding Colbert, I don't know how you want to label him. I don't know if I can even go along with what Jeffrey's description of that is, but he's about to be off the air. I mean, as of next month, CBS is going to can him. So, I mean, there's more consolidation within the even within, you know, that realm of the media. But so, what do we do, Mark? How do we fix it? You have all the answers, right?
Yeah, sure. I've got just a list. It depends what it is. If we're talking about, you know, democracy or how to protect it, people need to get out there and get active. I mean, now they need to go to protests. They need to call their members of Congress, especially if they live in a district that doesn't vote the way they want to, where the member of Congress doesn't. Members of Congress need to hear from constituents because it does matter. And you can either write them an email on their, you know, the link is on their website most of the time, or you can call them. There's a switchboard, you know, at the Capitol. You need to do that. You need to, people need to get their family and friends to understand what's going on right now, because what's going on right now is not normal. This is not like normal politics that everyone grew up with. This is a president of the United States and a party that is enabling him, trying to seize as much political power as they can get their hands on. There's no separation of powers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is deciding who gets money, how to spend money, which isn't his job at all. Mm-hmm. You're getting you got some masked federal agents murdered two people in Minnesota in recent months. You've got Trump like taking big money payments from people, and then suddenly they end up with pardons from their federal convictions. You get that there's this giant corrupt organization. The Trump administration is a corrupt organization. I mean, it's designed to make Trump money. And part of doing that means using government to profit from, and that's why he's He wants to be a mob boss slash dictator. And people need to tell their family and friends about this and get them to vote the right way.
And it seems like one thing we should do as well is encourage people. And I think it's important to read a diversity of media. I mean, I read The Economist. You know, I listen to WHO Radio. Charles,
I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, people need to. I don't really like it when, you know, when people just, you know, they get in this cocoon where they just hear the same stuff that they always, right. You know, that we just get their beliefs reinforced. It's nice. It's really healthy for a human being to be told something, to be disabused of their assumptions that may not
right,
be true.
Right. And it's also important that we support media outlets that maybe not traditional, like what you're doing with Substack. I mean, though there's more and more of that out there. People having their own podcasts, their own
right.
radio shows, their own columns, and we need to support and encourage that.
Yeah, and I want to.
Well, mine's free. Stop the Presses is free. So.
Okay. Good.
Google Stop the Presses and Mark Jacob without an S at the end of my name, and
without
just
an S.
Jacob.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, and you'll find it and join it. If you like it, fine. If you think it's stupid, you can unsubscribe with one click.
Okay, yeah, and I wanted to really thank you, Mark, because as somebody who's done a lot of media analysis and wrote my thesis on the New York Times coverage of Dr. King and Malcolm X, the work you're doing with Stop the Presses and also with Courier is very important because there's really very few outlets that do real good media analysis. So it's a joy to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Mark, and thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey. We got to run to a short break. Really appreciate you both joining us. When we come back, Kathy and Burns, my wife Kathy's going to join us. We're going to be doing our monthly garden Q&A. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design build services for high performance, low maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program. And it's the first week of April, meaning it's time for our monthly garden Q&A.
And it's been very interesting because March felt more like June or July, and April feels more like February. So things are a little out of whack. But great first question today. Somebody on one of the vegetable growing forums on Facebook asks, I am wanting to start an asparagus bed. Is it legal to dig it out of the ditch?
And since you're the rural gal, you better have the answer to that one.
The rural gal says everybody does it, and the legal mind in me, if I want to tap into that, says check your state code.
Oh, interesting. Is there a state code relevant to ditch asparagus?
Yeah, relevant. Well, in Iowa, the Iowa code 461A.41 says about removing plants, flowers, and fruit. No person shall in any manner remove, destroy, injure, or deface any tree, shrub, plant, or flower, or the fruit thereof, or disturb or injure any structure or natural attraction, except that upon written permission of the commission, certain specimens may be removed for scientific purposes. So the short answer is no, it is not legal.
Oh, that's silly. That's really silly.
It's silly, but
okay, so people,
just so you know, so everybody does it,
legal. When members of your family were out there pulling asparagus out of the ditch, they were breaking the law.
At one of my son's weddings, all of the asparagus at the rehearsal dinner was provided by his best man, who did pull it out of all the ditches around Mingo,
so,
Iowa.
So, criminal activity at a wedding, bad way to kick off a marriage.
Well, they're having a lovely marriage okay, now, good. So the marriage is legit. The yeah. asparagus was
well,
not.
And one thing you can do is start your own asparagus bed, too, if you want to be within the scope of the law.
And you just have to be patient. You yeah. have to be very patient for several years.
It's a lot of fun getting it out of the ditch.
But you
got to plan ahead. You got to plan in the fall.
And you have to know, was that ditch near this kind of spray you don't want on your asparagus
yeah, yeah.
or in
point.
The ground that your asparagus comes from? Another question, how long should I wait to transplant my sugar snap peas outside? And a similar question was, am I too late to start my lettuce indoors? Ed, what's your first reaction to that?
Wrong question. No, you should never start peas or lettuce indoors. I mean, those... When you go to transplant them, there'll be enough transplant shot that you'll set mm-hmm. them back. Just mm-hmm. direct sow. Put them right in the ground, early as possible.
Other seeds that you don't need to bother to start indoors, beans, cucumbers, squash, so many things, plant those directly into the soil. So read your soil or your seed packages if you need to.
Yeah, I guess, there's a couple, like kale, for example. I know some people who start kale indoors, and that works out pretty well. We tend to just sow it directly.
But we wanted to get a head start on that. And kale is a tougher plant than lettuce.
Yeah. Hardier. It won't be as shocked when you move it outside as lettuce would be. And also, when you do move any plant outside, whether it's we have tomatoes, eggplant, peppers that we'll be mm-hmm. planting next month, you know, those need to go through at least a week or more of hardening off, mm-hmm. an hour or more of exposure to the sun and the wind every day. You know, mm-hmm. 1 hour the first day, then two, then three.
To get it accustomed to the light and the breezes and all the forces of nature.
So what else we got?
Well, somebody is saying, and this is not a question, I'm just going to point out that someone says, I may have overplanted this year, and they put a photo of a whole bunch of seedlings growing in the trays under the lights. Someone's response, and they weren't asking a question, they were just saying, hey, everybody plants too much. Somebody said, if you like sourdough, I'd love to trade you a loaf for some plants. And that to me just made me jump for joy, because that's the way we do here in good old farm-to-table land, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm sure the IRS is not happy with any barter arrangement that isn't reported. But how do you report that? Here's a tomato plant. Thank you for the sourdough.
It's wonderful. I think that's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So I used to every year trade a rhubarb pie for a big bag of morel mushrooms.
Somebody had a question about pruning fruit trees. We have some that are out of hand. I don't have experience. They're mostly 6 to 8 feet tall, and a couple of the leaders are at least 15 feet. They didn't actually ask a question, but I think they want to know what to do about it.
Right, and the short answer is that one of your best resources about that is your state extension service. So recently, the Master Gardener connected with the Iowa State Extension helped us sort out some pruning needs for the public orchard in Drake Park near us.
Yeah, but there are different pruning needs for different trees, so it's always important to check that out. I see somebody asked about morels. Yeah, 30 to 80 bucks per pound, right? Go pick your own.
Yes.
Or try shiitake logs.
Yeah.
Kathy, thanks for joining me.
You
folks,
bet.
Thanks to our guests today, Mark Jacob and Jeffrey Weiss, and to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dedeman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, and thanks to the Des Moines Iver Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.